I mean, everything's so far so good.
So far so good.
You know, so far so good. Everything's played out the right way. We're gonna see what's happened with this number six pick. Cause I know Detroit, they want a running back, but they ain't trading up for a running back. Right? I don't think they're gonna pick up. Oh, they did?
Yeah, they just traded with Cleveland. They swapped picks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So where do you think that's gonna put you?
Oh, I wanna go to ATL. Me and Mike Vick. It's the Mike Vick and D Hall show.
David. Football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
16 short years later, from Virginia Tech cornerback D'Angelo Hall, who was drafted in 2004. In and amongst Eli Manning and Phil Rivers and Ben Roethlisberger and Sean Taylor and Larry Fitzgerald. Fascinating draft class back there in 2004 is the 2020 NFL draft. Fast approaches. D'Angelo Hall will be joining us here in Studio 66 for his second go-round here after a successful Virgin run about a month or so ago. In the meantime, before he shows up here, Spaghetti behind the glass, how are you? How was the weekend?
It was good. It was a good Sunday night cap with the Oscars, so it was pretty
happy
fun.
Birthday to our pal
Sam Posey's birthday,
Ricky.
Yeah.
Hollywood,
a lot going on Friday, Saturday. Yeah, so
yeah,
Sunday was a relaxing day. Just I squeezed in 1917. That was the last movie I had to watch before the
The Oscars handed out on Sunday night. My weekend consumed by, people have been pointing out, and I appreciate it because I'm a vain person. People have noticed that Dave is trying to shed some pounds. I've lost probably 15 or so pounds.
Makes one of us.
Over clearly you're not. Listen, you know what? Live. Once you have kids and everything, and the way you look doesn't matter to anybody anymore, that's when you can go like Dameshek and gain, but then you can go too far. Sometimes the man in the mirror tells the tale. Like I say, 3 or so months ago, I caught my reflection, full body. I don't know if I was entirely in the nude, but nude enough to see that there was no hiding from a grim reality, and that is that Dave was getting morbidly obese. So I set my mind to shedding a few, but then to celebrate in the last week or so, I took my oldest child, Oprah, to her father-daughter dance. And it was semi-lame for her. She wasn't enjoying it. So I said, well, let's get out of here and go have fun elsewhere. And it just so happened that there was this place nearby that serves delicious pie, like 20 different kinds of pie. So we went and we ate pie. And then I liked it so much that I went back and got more. Well, to tell the story quickly, I brought home some pie. And then my wife said, you didn't bring me any pie? And I said, well, I didn't know you would want that. Well, I brought home pecan pie. And she said, well, I don't eat pecan pie, and you know that. And I said, yeah, of course I have noticed. Well, you don't have to tell me because I'm fully aware of what choices you make in pie. So then I felt bad. And, well, then she went out with the little ones, and she brought back, out of spite, she brought back some coconut cream pie for herself, but then she left it in the fridge too long, and then I ate that pie.
Yeah.
And then she didn't like that move. So then I felt bad, and then I went and bought more pie at the good pie place, and I brought home 3 different kinds of pie, plus some cronuts too, and ostensibly for everybody at the house, but I knew deep down, the man in the mirror knew
those are yours.
What it was for.
Yeah.
I was going to eat those pies, and I did eat the vast majority of them. And then over this past weekend, I went back to the same pie place because I got a taste for it, Like some killers get a taste for blood? I got a taste for pie. And so then I ate more pie, and then I got in the scale, and I realized I was fat.
Same type or just different types of pie each time?
Well, a good question. Not fruit pie, but yes,
of course,
chocolate cream. A nice chocolate cream. I got a matcha, like a green tea kind
of. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
green
all the rage
tea
now.
Cheesecake. It was very good. Then I got a Rocky Road one. Then I got a pecan. Well, I got 2 pieces of the pecan because the first one went down so easy that I figured, let's see if the second one can repeat that, Let's see if this is some flash in the pie pan or if it can sustain this level of success. Spoiler alert, it did. Spoiler alert also. I've noticed that I'm starting to gain weight again. But I also had all the kids with no mama around. I had them all under my roof, and everybody survived. So it was a stressful weekend, but a good one. But then punctuated by the Oscars.
Yeah.
I think that was right. I think that was right for Parasite to win.
I think there's 4 to 6 movies you can make the argument for that could have won. I thought it was a fantastic movie year, and I thought I'm some movie buff, but I thought it was a really strong year. You have some years where it's like,
you see all the
water
movies,
ones, but yeah, I do. So I thought that between Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 1917, Jojo Rabbit, Parasite, I was high on Joker more than other people, and I also thought that Uncut Gems should have been nominated, but that was not.
I get the what people are talking about, the kind of anxiety it caused. Mm-hmm. I didn't love the picture, but there were a lot of things I did really enjoy about it. I didn't enjoy some of the surrounding less relevant the fringy elements of it, like the scoring of Uncut Gems bugged me.
Oh, I love the music they use. They have like a special guy for that. They do it in their other movies too. The Safdie brothers. I'm biased, admittedly, because they went to BU. So it's
okay. But I just didn't love it. I mean, it was good. The sum just didn't equal the parts for me.
That's the problem. It's one thing for not Best Picture, but to not have the Sandman be nominated for Best Actress.
I like the Sandman and what he stands for, but that was not nearly as good a performance as Punch Drunk Love. If you want to see him spread his acting wings, go back and watch that one. That's his. That's his finest performance. He's basically playing himself in that movie.
Yeah, but I didn't think no one was going to challenge Joaquin Phoenix to win anyway. But just to not nominate him when he comes out of him doing his silly Netflix movies with all his friends, which is awesome about Adam Sandler. I think they should have just thrown him in there for the nomination. But
the movie that largely got a little too slept on. Although now that I'm thinking about it, did 1917 win anything? Must have won some.
It won 3 awards.
Like Parasite cinematography or something, I bet?
Yeah.
I know that they're not actual, it wasn't a 2-hour single tracking shot, but it plays as though basically it is, that you're on a race with one human being for 2 hours.
1917 was incredible.
I loved it.
Yeah.
But as I've said before, and I'll say again to you now, if you loved learning about that somehow the Great War was conveyed to you in a way that you'd never seen or heard before, go check out the documentary They Shall Not Grow Old about the British soldiers. That, I mean, I would weep the entire time. That's all like, as soon as you drop me into one of those holes there and just like sit here and like, hey, the enemy, they're like 100 yards away on the other side, but in the meantime just sit here in the mud where the rats are and everything and be hungry and everything. I would just, the whole time I was in there, I would just weep until somebody took me out.
That's exactly why I thought that 1917 was so great. And it's not trying to spoil it for those who haven't seen, but it is just, you're basically just following two guys on a miniature mission to try to help the grand scheme of things, to be super vague about it, but you still get the feel of what was going on. You still get kind of a history lesson because you see like the different trenches. They're 100 yards apart, like you just said, and like the amount of rats and just dead horses and stuff that's near.
Yeah, I would hate it so much. Yeah. Not spoiler alert, I wouldn't do well in war.
No, I don't think I would either, but yeah.
No, I would do really bad. I'd be the first one taken out. I really do think that too, because I have no infirmity great enough that they'd be like, yeah, it, when they're inspecting me, examining me, they wouldn't be like, yeah, he can't go, we can't send them, he doesn't have bone spurs or whatever. They would send me, but then I'd be the first one gone. They'd be like, here they come, everybody run, retreat. And they'd be like, eh, you know, like 3 years later, that when the war was over, they'd be like, remember that guy on the first day? Like, he was a loudmouth, wasn't he? Yeah, he was kind of annoying, but it was still sad that he was the first one to go. Yeah, but I thought Parasite was right, and I do feel like has Tarantino ever won an Academy Award?
I'm sure.
Did he?
Yeah, I'll look it up.
As long as he won one before, I don't care for the outside of Brad Pitt getting it, and I'm not positive that Leonardo DiCaprio shouldn't have won Best Actor over Joaquin Phoenix.
Really?
Yeah.
And by the way, Quentin Tarantino's won screenplay twice for Pulp Fiction and Django. But no,
for
I
Django.
Yeah. Original Joaquin Phoenix for sure should have won that.
He should have, huh?
I think Leo was great, and I like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood more than most people. but I thought he had a few scenes, like the scene of him freaking out in his trailer was probably the high point for him, and him crying with the actress in the movie they're playing in the movie. But I thought he was like, okay, I think his other movies with Leo was way better.
He wasn't as extreme, or
Brad Pitt was awesome. I agree with that.
Brad Pitt was great.
Yeah,
I think the thing that is hard to pull off, I would know nothing about acting, of course. However,
you have acted.
That's true. Scorpion. You know what? I just ran into showrunner supreme Nick Santora.
Yeah,
I just ran into him at Jerry's Deli, and because I'm classy, he was with his wife and with another couple. He's the Scorpion showrunner who had me in there, and now he's doing gangbuster style. He really is the David E. Kelly of our time. But I saw him at Jerry's Deli. I had, you know, all the kids surrounding me, and so I couldn't play grab ass too much with him. But on my way out, I had the waitress send over a red velvet cake cupcake
to
the table. I thought that was a classy move.
That was a really good move. It's a cool move, too.
Yeah.
To do it from a distance, I think it's great.
Yeah. I wasn't even there to see it, you know? I think the thing that is difficult, that I admire, is if you think about the talented Mr. Ripley, Jude Law is great in that picture, and it might seem like, well, you know, he's a handsome-ish guy and all that. I think it must be really difficult to pull off. It's not the same role, obviously, as what DiCaprio did in Once Upon a Time, but that kind of swagger, but still there's something vaguely vain or potentially unlikable about it. I think that is... You know, it's more subtle, obviously, than being Joaquin Phoenix descending into craziness. But I just like DiCaprio ultimately a little bit better. And I do get, and this is, it's funny watching the Joker. I was thinking, how is this different than Taxi Driver, really? And then after the fact, I saw, oh, yes, it's a paler version of De Niro and Taxi Driver. And it kind of is. And once you get that in your head, it's hard to remove yourself from that.
Yeah, I watched Taxi Driver actually for the first time after Joker, and I definitely see the similarities to it. I just ultimately thought that what he did to get into that role, like the mindset and the physical shape, and I think all the Joker, or Arthur Fleck, I think is his name in the movie, that was still crazier than De Niro in
Driver, but yeah, which was crazier is a good one. Best Joker of the three cinematic versions. Or no, I guess there are four, because there was, I can't think of the...
Jack Nicholson.
Well, there was Nicholson. There was, and there's Heath a guy... Ledger.
Yeah.
And then there was the guy in the Suicide Squad. What's his
name? Oh.
Won the Academy Award himself.
Jared Leto. Yeah.
I never saw that one.
It was not good.
No.
No, it wasn't good.
Your favorite of the quartet, then?
I mean, it's hard to go against Heath, but I really love the Joker movie. So I'll go Heath. All Heath right. Ledger.
I think we park our cars in the same garage. But at the time, Nicholson was, because you're too young to remember. In fact,
I've seen it, but yeah,
it was a revelation at the time.
There's a gap though right now between the.
Well,
top
that was
two.
More cartoon sure. than being actually scary in a human way. Like imagine that guy, you wouldn't be scared of Nicholson.
It, right.
Like I say, plays like a cartoon. All right, Spaghetti, let's talk pro football before 23 D'Angelo shadows our door here. And the big news is that Phil Rivers is officially now hitting free agency. No big surprise there. And all of a sudden, the heat that we, the fire that we lit 3-4 months ago about Tom Brady to the Chargers, as my faith in that actually coming to pass starts to fade. It seems like now everybody else is getting in on that. I don't exactly see it, although the noise that Tom Brady is going to go to the Cowboys seems even less likely to me, just based on the fact that it's Mike McCarthy. Is he real? Is that something that Tom Brady is anxious to do? Yeah, he would have a good offensive line, but we're not even sure who he'd be throwing the ball to at this point down in Dallas. The offensive line is a legitimate consideration for Phil or otherwise, but Tom Brady does have a great knack for negating pressure, not in the, Roethlisberger kind of way, or Russell Wilson runs away from it, you know, is able to negate it by constantly rolling. Roethlisberger shoves those guys aside. Brady just gets rid of the ball very quickly. So I wonder, if they set about fixing up the offensive line, the rest of that team is loaded, the Chargers. And I would be, if I were Tom Brady and bellyaching about who did I have to throw to this past year, to go to Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and presumably Hunter Henry, if they could keep him, that would be awfully appealing if I'm 43-year-old Tom Brady.
I think from the Chargers standpoint, the one guy you have to just do everything you can to go after and get on your team is, I think, Cam Newton. If there's somehow miraculously Dak Prescott becomes available, and if the Chargers could kind of do some package deal with Dallas and get him, those are the two options. Because not only because you have to, you're like you said, you have a great team, you're in win now mode, but you also are moving to a new stadium and you have to, you know, kind of grab some sort of fan base in the Southern California area. And I think those are the two guys. I get Tom Brady has the quick fix maybe for a season, but Cam is going to be 31 with time the season starts. He has probably another good 7-8 years in him.
I mean
Dak,
that's right.
I think Dak is amazing and Dak
okay.
is young.
Reduce it back. So, okay, so he says, so Cam isn't going to be 43. He's not going to be 40, let's say. Mm-hmm. Although I would say the same thing about Roethlisberger 5 years ago, and if that elbow checks out, we still have to wait and see. Like, he may make it to 40. Cam obviously has relied even more than Roethlisberger did in the first half of his career on being able to run around a little bit, but Cam probably does have, as you say, a half a decade.
Sure.
At least as being a viable quarterback, and you know, for all the detractors, it is crazy how we are victims of recency bias. But I'll refer you to completely different guys who played the same position in pro football. But, you know, a lot of people, when Peyton Manning was when they were going over and Curtis Painter was in there and, oh, Andrew Luck's going to be our quarterback and the Colts moved on and all the doubts and all the whispers about Peyton. Peyton went on to have, you may have heard, some nice success in Denver. I wonder if the Chargers are able to put the blinders on to all that outside noise and just evaluate Cam and his health. If he is anything close to what he's been in the first decade of his career, he's tracking towards the Hall of Fame. And a dynamic guy like that in that division where Patrick Mahomes is and where the Raiders seem to be on the rise and so too do the Broncos, Cam makes a ton of sense instead of giving up a year. Because if you decide, let's go Justin Herbert or otherwise, you're basically saying that's another year told with all these guys of a Super Bowl worthy roster that we're just going to give away for another year. That doesn't make a ton of sense. The Chargers, I get it. Oh, you know, ideally Tua would be their guy, and I've perpetuated that too, that's how you're going to win fans over the long hauls, to get a QB who's there for the next 15 years and 9-year-old kids latch on to and they follow the arc of his career. But that's an imperfect solution now. If you could get Brady in the short term, but if you could get Cam, that makes all the sense in the world. And you don't have to use that sixth overall on a backup for him. Instead, you use that on another piece, maybe an offensive lineman, maybe another weapon to target in the passing game. And or I don't know, maybe you want to go after one of the many running backs that look nice. DeAndre Swift looks nice if Melvin Gordon's going to go. Anyway, I could see the Chargers. Man, that division. See, now that's fun. Football season just ended, and I can talk myself or I could talk to you, Spaghetti, about the AFC West for another hour here and how fascinating it could be over these next 3 months with free agency and the draft, but trying to position who's going to win. Well, I guess we'll say the Chiefs are going to win that division, but man, it ain't going to be a cupcake division next year.
Yeah. I mean, both the Raiders and the Chargers in that division have a decision to make a quarterback, which will either turn them and they'll become full on contenders, or they're going to be like, well, we're going to wave the white flag and we're going to just let this rookie kind of learn and we're going to lay down this next year or two. So that'll swing the whole balance of power in the AFC.
Well, I mean, that's a fun thing to root for if you like your AFC West football. Drew Lock in year two, plus the reigning champion and 2 years removed from the league MVP, plus Cam Newton, plus the GOAT Tom Brady. That would be fun,
yeah,
if things broke that way, and certainly would ensure seats being filled in Los Angeles when the new stadium opens, at minimum when the three division rivals show up. All right, there he is coming in through the door there. So let's introduce him right now. It's our guy, D'Angelo Hall.
Dave Damashek. Damashek.
All right, here he is. He made a stellar debut, what, 3 weeks or so ago, Eddie Spaghetti. Now back, seated to my immediate left. He got, you know what? A lot of feedback from the Czech Republic on the strong debut here.
Okay,
let's see how he does now in his sophomore.
Let's do
effort
it.
Here. It's D'Angelo Hall. What's happening?
What
fella?
Up, Czech? I'm
how
good,
are you,
baby? I can't complain at all.
Look at you. You're powering through sickness. You know?
Yeah.
Good for you. You watch the Oscars?
I did not. I was traveling, so I didn't get to watch. But I need to check the updates because I know something came out of there that was talked about that I need to figure out what happened.
Which one?
I don't know. It's a couple things, right?
Yeah, I don't. Well, I'm not sure. Well, I thought it was weird that Eminem came out and performed something that he first did 18 or what, a decade ago?
Oh, for real?
Something like that. It's like, why are you doing the 8 Mile number right now? Like, what does that have to do with the calendar year 2020? Did you see any of the movies?
I don't know. I did. I don't. Gosh, which ones did I see?
Parasite, 1917, Uncut Gems.
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, so you didn't really see it?
No, I didn't. I guess I felt like I did. Maybe it was last year's
Joker.
I saw a little bit of Joker. I heard Joaquin Phoenix kind of acceptance speech a little bit, where he went on a tirade. Was that the Oscars or was that another award
he did a lengthy speech.
Was that the Oscars though?
It's very strange to me. I thought that what he had to say, the words had power, the way in which he delivered them. Actors have this weird thing where they can play all these other people,
but they can't be themselves.
But
they struggle with it.
But I feel like it's an affectation. Am I right, or am I overly cynical? I feel like stammering. I can't find my words. It doesn't really line up with.
I've met a lot of actors and actresses, and in movies you love them because you love that character. But then when you meet them and you expect that character to be who they are, and you're like, I'm disappointed. I wanted you to be that dude in the movie, not who you really are. So,
well,
right.
You know, it is one of our favorite things to do here on the DDFP is get to know the guys, as they say, under the helmet. And and so let's talk a little bit very quickly here because big news day with Phil Rivers.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's a big news day, but we all saw this.
Yeah, I think
a month
all.
Or
yeah.
6 weeks ago was more or less a done deal that Phil had played his last game for the Chargers. But you, as it happens, got drafted in and amongst the legendary 04 QB class.
Yeah.
You go 8th overall?
Yeah. 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 I go 8th overall to Atlanta, and I get to actually hang out with some of these dudes. Like, you got to realize, Sheck, I was a little dude who was fast, super athletic. Some teams didn't know if I was a returner, a shutdown corner. I was fortunate to play in the Big East where, you know, I got to go against Larry Fitzgerald, who, you know, won the Biletnikoff and was the top receiver in the country. The year before that, I got to go against Andre Johnson, who was, the number 3 or 2 pick in the draft. And so didn't play a lot of really good receivers through the course of my college career, but in those splashes, I was able to show some of the scouts that I belonged. And yeah, I was invited to the draft back when they only took like 5 guys. And so it was a huge honor, but I'm hanging out with Eli Manning, Robert Gallery, Kellen Winslow was there, Roy Williams, the receiver, Ben Roethlisberger. So, you know, you got me in the midst of all of these guys, and I was like, dude, I'm just happy to be here. Like, we had an ongoing bet who was going to be the last guy drafted. Big Ben, you lost that bet because he was the last guy sitting in the green room, not me. But I was 100% confident and comfortable being the last guy in the green room.
Man, that is so funny. And 180 degrees from all the guys who've sat where you're sitting now, because my favorite conversations are to hear Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, the Tom Brady 5, you remember when he made that, all the QBs who were drafted ahead of him?
Uh-huh.
We have the Maurice 5? There are 5 running backs drafted, and he can name every single one, where they were slotted, and what his emotional reaction was to those. Reggie Wayne can tick off every wide receiver, what slot they were, why he was better than all those guys. The chip on the shoulder, you're the antithesis of that. You thought, I'm lucky to be here right now. So you didn't sweat at a moment like, I better go, that I don't
want
to get embarrassed.
Well, because going through the draft process, even when I left as a true junior, you know, it was a lot of guys rated ahead of me. And I didn't flinch. I knew watching the film that they weren't better. They weren't faster. They couldn't cover better than me. They couldn't get the ball. They weren't dynamic returning the football whenever they got their hands on it. And so to me, it didn't matter who the scouts thought was better than me. I said, cool, we got to go through this whole process of working out and I'm going to kill it. Because I knew I was strong. I knew I was fast. I knew I was, you know, athletic and could kill any test. But the difference is I was able to translate it to the field. Even the guy who went 10 in that draft, Dante Robinson, he was a corner slash safety out of South Carolina. And me and him were like the underdogs because it was guys like Chris Gamble, who I think is on this list. He was known for going both ways at O State. And, you know, it was so many other guys, Nathan Vassar, Kewan Ratliff. You know, it was a ton of guys who in the midst of being in college football's premier conferences and playing in big games and, you know, playing in BCS bowl games, got the notoriety, won all types of awards. I tell people all the time, you know, I was a Thorpe semifinalist, which is the award they give to the best DB in the country. And I had one pick because nobody threw the ball at me. Kewan had eight and took like four back. Sean Taylor was a finalist who we tried not to throw the ball his way, but he ended up making some plays. I always felt like Sean Taylor should have won that award. Kewan Ratliff, I think, won that award. If it wasn't Kewan, it was Nathan Vassar because he played at Oklahoma and it was the committee was in Oklahoma. So a lot of politics. And so I always remember that and not making All-American teams. But the draft was my kind of coming out party where I got to show everybody else, like, look, I can do all of this. I can kill all of this stuff, and I actually can play football. And so I mentioned Dante Robinson because he was another guy who wasn't very highly thought of in the draft process. And prior to running fast and working out hard, he got his value up, and he was a top 10 pick.
So that's interesting. So based on the quality – well, of course, your name didn't get called a lot in college because you were so effective. Guys just didn't throw in your direction, which is a weird kind of math that exists in pro football as well. That, yeah, if you're getting a lot of picks in the season, it means because they're throwing at you a lot.
Exactly.
That is fascinating that extends back to college. But, yeah, I'm sure imbued with the confidence of lining up against Larry Fitzgerald, who really is one of the best receivers in college football history I ever. Also in the Big East. It's weird to me because, you know, as we've discussed, I'm a Pitt fan. It's a bummer to me that they've had Shady McCoy, Darrell Revis, Larry Fitzgerald, all those linemen, so on. So we could go on, and yet they struggle to go 7-5. Yeah. You make it to a bowl game. It's embarrassing. Yeah. But listen, that's not what we're going to talk about. Very quickly, tell me in front of how – I mean, I don't know how much you could keep an eye when you're at Virginia Tech, how much you were aware of – a guy at Miami of Ohio and Roethlisberger, but were you at least aware of Phil Rivers?
I mean, I was aware
Eli?
Of all of those
Did you
guys
see
just
them?
Because Ben had the name too. You know, he had that name Roethlisberger that kind of, you know, stood out. And he was a bigger quarterback. You know, he was known to extend plays and, you know, and as a DB, you know, you hate for quarterbacks to do that. And so, I mean, I knew of Ben, knew he was a small school guy, but knew he had all the talent in the world. Obviously, I was a huge Peyton Manning fan. And so I knew little brother Eli was at Ole Miss where his dad played and all of those things. And, you know, being an East Coast guy, I obviously knew Phillip Rivers. You know, I had a ton of buddies who played in the ACC. And that was one of the big reasons Virginia Tech went to the ACC is because they were losing out on so many recruits because that ACC corridor is kind of – it's easy when you live in the 757 Virginia Beach area to get to games. Blacksburg was 5 hours away from my house where Virginia Tech is. I could get to UNC in 3 hours.
That makes so much sense for that.
Yeah.
It's still weird, though, that you got Syracuse and Pitt now in the ACC. That doesn't exactly still hit me.
It's weird even having Virginia Tech because I view myself as a Big East guy, and I went and got an ACC Legends Award, and I'm like, dude, I never played a snap.
It's so funny because that's what I said to Spaghetti earlier today. I said, check out and see, because D'Angelo had to have played Phil Rivers at Virginia Tech, and I thought, oh, yeah, I completely – all this 21st century conference affiliations have moved around so much. I'm like, oh, yes, I even forget Virginia Tech was in the Big East. That was weird.
The year I left college early was the year they went to the ACC. And Coach Beamer told us as freshmen, like, if our senior year, we'd have a chance to win the national championship. And myself and Kevin Jones, who was the number 30 pick in the draft, mm-hmm. he left too as a true junior.
Really liked him a lot. Don't know why it didn't exactly work out for him in the NFL.
He was dynamic in college. But if he and I stay in college, we play USC at FedEx Field that year, first game of the season. They end up losing. We had a corner get beat. I feel like that's me on Reggie. That doesn't happen. And then they ended up playing Auburn in the Sugar Bowl, and they lost by a touchdown to Auburn. And so I'm like, man, if we're there, we got a chance. And that's what hurts most, knowing we couldn't get Coach Beamer that, you know, back into the national championship, because that, you know, that 99 season with Mike Vick, man, it was special.
And tell me again, I think you told us, is it Tyrod Taylor's your guy? Or do you predate Tyrod?
Nah, well, my quarterback was Brian Randall. So I came to was my freshman year. So I totally missed Mike Vick. I had Brian Randall, and then Mike's little brother came
Marcus,
my last
right? yeah,
year,
yeah.
but he played more receiver than quarterback. And Ty was a couple years prior to that. I think he was like 2010 or something. So he's a lot younger than me. But, I mean, I keep in touch with all those guys. I'm actually rooting for Ty. Hate it for Phillip Rivers that, you know, his time has come to an end. But, you know, when one chapter closes, another one opens. And I'm hoping Ty can go in there and hold it down.
That does lead us neatly into that conversation. And I just will say quickly, it's a good thing that you guys didn't win the national championship, because you could have really further popularized the horrible burgundy and orange color scheme. And that wouldn't be good for anybody. That's not good. Anyhow, let's talk Phil. So now as you look back, I mean, Roethlisberger's elbow is the question mark now going forward. Uh-huh. And he is probably, as I keep saying, the last best hope for that whole era of QBs. Mm-hmm. You know, or maybe Tom Brady, if he lands, we'll see what happens with him. But yes, you know, Eli's gone. Phil is fading. We'll see. Maybe he could land in a relevant spot. But as you look at the you know, decade and a half of their respective careers, did you, when you were coming out of school, sitting amongst these guys at that draft, did you have a sense of where they were each going to land? Did you have a feel, I think Roethlisberger's going to end up being the best pro QB, or was that premature for
you? I mean, it was a little premature. I think initially, being around all three of them, you felt like they all had a chance to be really special. You know, you take Eli went one, Phillip 4, Ben 11, and then I think the next quarterback was J.P. Lossman, 22. Mm-hmm. And so you knew those three were different, were absolutely different. I think what made Ben so special compared to the rest of them is he was a little bit before his time. And I know it's been other big mobile quarterbacks, but the way in which Ben – you know, kept his eyes downfield, but was able to have a guy on him and still get that guy off and keep the play going as a corner and as a DB. That's the hardest thing in the world, to feel like, oh, my dude got him. Oh, my God, no, he don't have him. And then you're still trying to make that play. One of Eli's greatest throws was, you know, in that Super Bowl, where he shrugs a guy off and gets that ball up, and his guy makes a play. David Tyree makes a play. I played against him, too, at Syracuse. Shout out Tyree. But so – Ben was just a little bit before his time, because you think about how the quarterback position is being played now. I was watching Mike Vick's little special, and you hear Bobby Bowden say, it's going to be 10 years from now, and this was in 2000. 10 years from now, it's going to be a bunch of Michael Vicks running around all these campuses. And you look now, and it's like, they're not only running around the campuses, they're running around NFL stadiums. And so Ben kind of still offers you a little bit of that old conventional quarterbacking drop back, but can buy time. And so, you know, I love Eli, I love Phil, but I just, you know, I was just having an argument in the green room talking about these quarterbacks, and, you know, the pass rushers now are so dynamic. That is always going to be a guy free. Bosa's always going to beat that tackle. Just the rules of the game, holding is such a fine line for offensive linemen that, you know, we have that advantage as a defense to just be able to rush. And so you got to have a quarterback who can just move a little bit. And I'm not saying you got to be Lamar Jackson, but you got to be Jimmy G. You got to be able to move out the pocket a little bit. You don't have to be Mahomes, but if you watch Mahomes, if you watch Russell Wilson, their ability to, even Aaron Rodgers, their ability to just move a little bit out the pocket. You know, I think what makes Drew Brees and Tom Brady different is they use that check down like their feet, where if I ain't got it, I'm going to hit that check down. Like, they always know where that check down is, and I think a lot of young quarterbacks don't want to use that check down.
It's interesting, too. Mahomes, by comparison, does that what seems unlike what Brady and Brees have done. He takes a deeper drop. When he feels pressure, if he doesn't roll away from it, he just steps five steps further back, and it's negated by the power of his arm.
His arm strength.
But it is weird. But Brees and Brady are, you might say, anachronistic, except that they both, neither one a runner, but they figured out early on that subtle slide up in the pocket.
Yeah,
because it changes the angle entirely, that it makes the pass rushers look silly. Like, yeah, wow, you got great depth there. The only problem is Tom Brady's 10 yards further upfield than you are now, pass rusher, right? Yeah,
and I'm not saying those guys can't play Eli and Phillip. I'm just saying it's much tougher for them. And unless they're processing things and coding things the way that Drew Brees and Tom Brady, that's what makes them dudes Hall of Fame quarterbacks first ballot, without a doubt. That's why Drew has all the yards he has and Tom has all the yards and rings he has. They're different, and sometimes it's just different guys. And so, yes, I root for Eli. You know, he's done now, but yes, I rooted for those guys. And Phillip Rivers, I'm still rooting for him. Hopefully,
why? Because they were in your draft class. That's why you rooted for him.
Absolutely.
Kind of weird. Is that? What do you care what they do?
When I played against him, because you always want your draft class to kind of
wait a second.
Stand atop the, you know, the,
you're not one
the
of these guys
of draft class.
Who do you self-identify as? As a Falcon, a Redskin? What do you think of yourself as in your brain?
I mean, I was a Falcon for 4 years, and I was a Redskin for 10.
Okay, fair.
I see myself as both. You know, if I ever get a gold jacket, I'm going in as a Redskin. That's without question, because I played there the longest. But I mean, Atlanta got me started. You know, Atlanta made me who I was.
Well, I ask because you're not one of these people who does the thing where, like, I love when the NFC East wins because that's my division.
Nah,
that's the worst.
I don't so much care about the NFC East winning anything. I just like I'm about relationships, and like, these are dudes that I know personally. I mean, we've come up together, and so I'm just attached to him. I'm drawn to him. I got a personal connection with him, and so that's going to always kind of take precedent over, you know, anything else.
Quick detour. What do you think of I think the Skins are at their best when they wear those gold pants. I think that's a nice
pants.
Look. What
every player hates the gold pants.
Why?
Because it's
those look so good. What are you talking about?
We wore the gold pants for so long, for a stretch, that no one wanted to wear gold pants.
Why?
We wore them so much.
When RG3 wore those in his debut in NOLA, he looked dynamite. That started a new era. What do you turn your nose up at those gems for? They look better than the white ones.
It's cool to throw it. I mean, it might look better than the white ones occasionally, but when you're wearing them all the time, we hated them.
Okay, best Falcons get up. You know the Bartkowski era ones?
Yeah, they were dope. We didn't get to wear any of those when I
know
played.
You
that's
didn't,
what
but
sucks.
That's what they should go back to,
yeah,
right? The all
I,
red.
I liked those for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Last thing then. I want to get to you in February here as the combine is approaching and then the draft and everything else. What's somebody doing who is a veteran in the NFL? What is somebody doing right now at this time of the year? Are you like,
this is
my time to eat pie.
Yeah,
now I can do whatever I want.
They're vacationing, eating pie, you know, right after the Super Bowl's over. It's kind of where you take those two, three weeks to kind of just decompress, chill, before you start up kind of just moving around, because off-season programs will start end of March maybe, early April, if I'm not mistaken. And so guys should be relaxing because it's about to ramp back up 100%. So I mean, this was a time for me where me and the family, we took trips and we got out, you know, we got away from the madness of football. I'm talking trips to places that don't even have TVs and, you know,
that's too far for me.
And so I mean, you have to let your mind go at peace for a little bit, because like I said, it's about to ramp back up for a lot of these guys. And it's a different world, you know. Fighting for their jobs.
Did you ever do as I did this past weekend and take the kids? You have six kids.
Yeah.
Which is remarkable because I have four and I thought that was a lot.
Yeah.
Did you ever handle them solo for like more than like 5 hours in a row? Because I did 48 straight hours on my own.
Yeah.
You did it.
Yeah. 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 I normally have the boys a lot because all the girls cheer. And so my wife takes them to like cheer competitions. They'll go to Dallas for like this big NCAA nationals in a couple weeks. And so, yeah, I normally always have the boys. We always just kicking it, man. But all my boys are like outdoorsy, want to be out playing basketball, riding four-wheelers. So it's low maintenance for sure. We play video games. It's not dealing with the teenage girl drama is very fun not having to deal with that.
Look at that, D'Angelo, a man at peace. See, retirement's treating you well, right?
Heck yeah.
You don't have to hang on so long, Tom Brady. Go live.
Enjoy the fruits of your labor.
But now, last thing I'm thinking about is when you were sitting there, because I can't remember it off the top of my head, when you're sitting at that in that draft room with all those fellas, did you have hair?
I did.
You did have hair.
And a big suit.
Did you have the beard?
I think I had the little chin strap going, little thin little
I want to see pictures of that. Let's see if we can dig that up there, Spaghetti. I'd like to see what the
We actually have it.
Oh, you do?
Earlier, because we're looking for some drops, but you did like an inside the like draft kind
we
of.
We did like a hey rookie, I think.
Yeah, you were wired up, so you were. It actually was hilarious because like they were like following you going to like a bathroom and stuff. Like, yeah, I'll be right back, and you're like, no, I'm chill. Like, this is where I should go. Actually, it was really, really awesome.
Oh yeah, behind the scenes because I think I got a phone call
in the
bathroom from one of the teams.
Yeah, and oh man, what a it is funny to look at the feast and famine of the draft. You go from all these Hall of Famers. I mean, Fitzgerald's going to the Hall. Sean Taylor's an all-time great who went, obviously, too soon. Fitzgerald. But then in and amongst those guys, you got Kellen Winslow Jr. and Roy Williams. And there's D'Angelo. And then there's Reggie Williams from Washington.
You know what's funny about Reggie? Reggie grew up in 757 Virginia area with me. I knew Reggie in elementary school. And his dad worked for Boeing and got transferred to Seattle, so fell out of touch with
I was gonna say, how did he wind up out
some
in
of my other buddies still talked to Reggie from around the way, and it was so dope to reconnect with him through like the draft process, going to visit teams at the rookie premiere out in LA. I hadn't seen Reggie since we were probably 10 years old, but yeah, to watch him, you know, I watched him in college going up against Gamble and all them dudes at Ohio State while he was at Washington. But, yeah, man.
Wait a second. Reggie Williams. Guys,
the receiver, Reggie Williams.
I know that. But, now I'm thinking about it. He Heisman posed, didn't he?
Did he?
Didn't he do
I
that?
I think he did after he bombed Gamble or something on one of them games.
Yeah, I believe that's correct. Listen, I could talk to you for another 3 hours. Let's spread those 3 hours out over several appearances coming up here.
No doubt.
In Studio 66. For now, though, there he is. And lick your wounds all you want, Falcons fans. He wants to go in as a skin if he goes into the Hall of Fame. And by the way, will you go in as you look now, or will you go in on draft day with a little bit of hair on top?
I'll probably do like I look now. Who knows? Ben Watson, number 32.
How about that?
Ben still was playing. Ben was out there with Tom this year.
I got to tell you, 04, I'm not trying to insert a chip on your shoulder.
Good draft.
Yeah, I always say 2011 is the best draft ever, but this first round is pretty juicy. Because the headline is...
It's spotty, but...
The three Hall of Famers at QB. Do you think all three go to the Hall, by the way?
I think they do.
Do you?
I think they do.
If you okay now, you know, this really
Phillip
is the last
got a ring. He'd have been a shoe-in, but
that's right for sure. Last thing for real though. Let's say they all stay where they were originally drafted. Eli,
oh man,
to the Chargers.
To the Chargers, yeah.
Phil goes to the Giants. Roethlisberger. Wait, well, actually, the Giants wanted Roethlisberger, and the Steelers, Bill Cowher specifically, wanted Phil Rivers more, and it kind of shook out that way. And I've asked Cowher about that, and he said, like, it all worked out. And I'm like, that's not the question, coach. I'm like, you wanted Phil, right? And he's like, listen, they were both great. And I'm like, that's not exactly what you're saying still.
I don't know if they got them Super Bowls.
Do the Steelers win two with Roethlisberger? Do the Giants get theirs with if Roethlisberger's in New York, they still win two, right?
That defense was dominant. I think they still win, too. I don't know if Eli makes that throw to Santonio Holmes, though, to get his feet in. I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know.
All right, you go. I see your phone calling. We appreciate the time. Go do your fancy TV stuff. Watch him on Total Access, of course, and we'll look forward to your next visit here, 23, up in Studio 66. D'Angelo Hall, everybody. Get well soon.
You're listening to David Damashek.
There he is, D'Angelo Hall. What do you think, Spaghetti? Do you like him now? You loved him the first time. Did you like him as much the second time?
I did. I think that it's always fun when people – I love the college football talk and, like, the process. I know it's a special thing that we've done the show with the whole draft process, but his memory is great, too, and just hearing all those guys about how – like how he has a relationship with the 04 class. And I get that. Like just watching his clip when I mentioned the behind the scenes thing, and he was pretty cool, calm, composed, just like he is here, where you see those other videos of, you know, Aaron Rodgers like sweating bullets in this thing. He was like, "No, man, I'm good." Like he was like, "I'm supposed to be here." He's like, "If it happens, great." Like those quarterbacks are supposed to go high. It was pretty funny watching him.
Because I have no recollection of what he looks like with hair. So I'm looking.
He looks
forward
very.
To as soon as
it
we
looks
stop
exactly
here.
The same.
I want to see. Well, I'll be the judge of that. Now you judge this, Spaghetti. Do you agree with his opinion about? Well, I don't know that he asserted how many. Would the Chargers have won? They won zero with Phil. Would they have won a Lombardi with Eli? I doubt it, right?
I mean, but call me crazy. Roster-wise, just thinking of – I know it's a large span for all these three quarterbacks, their careers. But the rosters on paper, the Steelers had some good defenses, but the Chargers were loaded. They had a ton of guys who were awesome. And
they didn't have great pass catchers. Antonio Gates, I guess.
But Gates is an all-timer. And you had Tomlinson, who was an all-timer at the position of catching the footballs. And then their defense had guys.
I take it back. Vincent Jackson was very good.
Sure. They had names. Like that's a team that should have won at least one. So I think maybe they're not all as equally interchangeable, the quarterbacks, but I think that if any, that's what hurts against.
You think Phil wins? You think Phil wins two Super Bowls, goes to three if he's the Steelers QB?
I think the Steelers would have at least gotten one with Rivers at the helm. With those defense they had back in the day, those were something else. And the offense was good enough, whether it was Willie Parker or Jerome Bettis. And
what if Seven's the quarterback of the Giants?
I think the Giants are in really good shape with them. Because the difference is, the Giants, I think, and I will go to the grave thinking this, if the whole Plaxico Burress incident didn't happen, look at the Giants' record that year. They were killing teams. They were like 10-1 when that happened. They were the favorites to win it all again, the back-to-back years. Obviously, Eli's kind of dip in his regular season numbers is what hurts his career and why a lot of people don't think he should be in the Hall, whereas Big Ben obviously has had an awesome career and has been pretty even throughout. So maybe they had another run or two in them because the Giants only won playoff games in those two Super Bowl runs. So
it's interesting, too, that D'Angelo identifies what I always say and get called a homer for pointing out. Roethlisberger was ahead of his time in that sense. As I always say, it's weird for Breeze and Brady and Rodgers, and perhaps the argument is that they're such distinct talents that nothing really reminds you of them. And I kind of get that. It's kind of the Michael Jordan, you know, Kobe reminds you so much when you watch the highlights of the two guys that Kobe and Jordan line up similarly, whereas LeBron cuts a completely different figure. So it's hard to kind of evaluate them side by side. But I always say to this date, almost every year, somebody comes out of the draft and is like, oh, he's going to be like Roethlisberger. And you never see that. It's weird that that's the case. And I guess Josh Allen, like I always say, if Roethlisberger and Cam Newton had a baby, it would be Josh Allen. That's kind of the way I look at them. Although I don't know that this year's draft has somebody.
There's always guys. I mean, last year there was a guy in the draft, and I feel bad calling out these players by name, so I'm going to skip it. But if you look at every draft, there's guys who have these big, big frames and these big, big arms, and some of them have gone, you know, at the top of the draft and have been complete busts, and there's some guys more middle round, more projects, but none have really lived up until, I guess, Josh Allen have or Cam to an extent. If do what Big Ben has done.
I mean, Jameis to a degree. He's not obviously the athlete that Cam or Roethlisberger was coming out of school, but still cuts that figure. Like more kind of guys will bounce off of him rather than he'll run away from them kind of thing. Last thing, Spaghetti. And by the way, for the record, Damashek, the QB Whisperer, right again. about Ben Roethlisberger. At the time, I said, I hear about Cowher liking Phil. Roethlisberger's the guy.
Do you remember the game?
He looked like a guy. It's not that I have to see what he did at the combine. I don't care what he did there. I care about watching him when I watch him. He looked like an NFL QB to me. The way guys would bounce off him, the way he could sling it. Never liked Phil's weird arm. I wouldn't have been able to embrace that.
In 04, I remember watching the games, like the Miami of Ohio games on ESPN. They would put them on purpose because of Ben. And I remember watching, I remember his parents like being in the stands, and the camera would always show him because he was the guy. I really don't remember watching Eli or Phil as much. I don't remember watching Phil, but Big Ben is just always stuck in my mind. I was watching him back in the day.
By far and away, that is funny in hindsight that I saw much more of Roethlisberger than I did of Phil, who was not mighty ACC, but he wasn't on TV nearly as much. Eli got a lot of run because of his older brother. Last thing, Spaghetti, before we wrap it up, do you think D'Angelo anywhere, deep down gets upset when I point out that Virginia Tech has an ugly color scheme?
I don't get why you don't like those uniforms.
Because that's a bad color combo.
I don't know.
I like good color combos. That's why.
I think the white
maroon?
Tops. The white tops with the ruined pants. And like I think those are really nice.
Orange and maroon. Do not go together.
Or the maroon tops, they have the white and orange stripe on the shoulder. I think those are really nice. Really, really nice.
Really nice.
I think I owned Michael Vick Vatek jersey with those colors. I liked them a lot.
Liking a player is one thing. Liking the color scheme is a different matter entirely.
No, but I think they're unique. There's too many boring color schemes in college football. I think those are great.
Well, listen, I'll say this. I'll wrap it up with this. I like D'Angelo. Very much. I enjoy his football insights. I enjoy his life insights, save one, his sense for uniforms. He doesn't like the Skins gold pants.
See, I think those are terrible.
You don't know anything either. Why don't you and D'Angelo?
But those like dull gold, like they're not even like the Notre Dame gold. It's like the dull gold with
dull gold. It's bright gold. It's not metallic gold. That's what Notre Dame was.
Yeah, not
metallic.
I like the metallic look.
The gold is what the Packers and the Steelers and the A's and teams like this wear.
Yeah, again, I think the regular, like the maroon, the jerseys that the Redskins wear now with the sleeves and the stripes, those are a lot better than those like blank.
Please cut off your own mic. Cut off your own mic.
We're on different sides on this.
What I'd like though is after you cut your mic is to tell the listener to drop us an ear. We always appreciate the ears, and we'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce for you coming up. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.